Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. You are listening to Justice and Drew. Sam behind the glass in the booth next door pushing our buttons this morning. Glad you're with us.
Pleased to be joined now by friend of the show, Kim Crockett from the Center of the American Experiment. I always have to emphasize the of, just as a gentle reminder to myself.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, people like to say it a different way, and we'll take it. We'll take it.
AmericanExperiment.org is the website. You reached out to us a couple days ago because you've been paying attention, very close attention to the Betsy DeVos hearings, the education secretary nominee, specifically the portion of the hearings where she was questioned by our own Senator Al Franken. And I wanted to bring you in because I know this is an issue that is near and dear to your heart and get your thoughts on, well, let's start with Betsy DeVos as education secretary, your thoughts on that nomination, on her good pick, could be better pick, bad pick, where you fall on that spectrum there?
Betsy DeVos is the left's worst nightmare. And it's not for that reason that I think she's a great pick.
Doesn't hurt.
I think the skill set she brings to the Department of Education is just outstanding. Mm-hmm. She is their worst nightmare because she has spent 30 years on a bottom-up business model, working with actual children, their parents, school districts, and states to enact real choices for quality education for children. And the other side is a top-down model. The bureaucracy that has become education has a top-down model. And so they are absolutely apoplectic right now over this choice. So on the one hand, you know, let's have some fun and enjoy this.
Right.
Because they're freaking out.
Well, with that, we were talking about this before we went on the air, but you have the Department of Education, and it is to say it's a large entity is an understatement. So what's the best approach when it comes to all of the opposition that is there, that is coming? Because as we were talking about, we were discussing yesterday, this is going to be a major, major battle because many people across the spectrum are going to feel threatened, not just from the institution of education, but jobs as well. So what's the best approach? What is Betsy DeVos's best approach at looking to do reforms, to fix this system that I think a lot of us would agree is really broken?
Well, let's start with Minnesota. We came up in the hearings. Senator Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, who used to be the Secretary of Education under George Bush I, pointed out that charter schools were started in Minnesota under a DFL governor named Rudy Perpich. Do you know what year that was? 1991. And so Al Franken, Senator Franken, when it was his turn to speak and ask questions from DeVos, said, "Yeah, that's my party. We did that," and took some credit for it. If I were DeVos, when she doesn't have to be so deferential and polite, I would say, "Senator Franken, what have you done for us lately?" Mm-hmm. Minnesota was on the cutting edge back in the 90s, where you had a DFL Iron Range governor saying, "It's about these kids, and we need to do something different because what we're doing now isn't working." And that was a long time ago.
Right.
So if I were the secretary, I would continue doing what she's been doing for decades. She has reached hundreds of thousands of children across the United States. The other side likes to say, let's do it for the children. How often do you hear, "Let's do it for the children"? Well, here you have a secretary of education who's actually been doing it for the kids.
I'm glad.
So I think she just keeps doing what she's been doing.
Yeah. I like what you said at the beginning where, you know, she works from the bottom up. She works with children.
Up.
She works with parents. Because
right.
that's who that's who the public school system exists for. Yeah. And we've sort of lost that mindset with the ascension of the teachers union and the massive power that they have, not just in Minnesota, but on a national level. I mean, there's hardly...
They're unrivaled in their ability to...
They are really one of the most, one of the most, if not the most powerful entity in politics in this country. And that goes overlooked and that goes unreported.
Right.
And it really does. And we've sort of shifted that schools exist to benefit the teachers and the teachers union, not necessarily the parents and the students. And just that, that shift in mindset that she would bring to the position, I think is, that's her most valuable asset.
Right. This is not a woman who aspired to run a large bureaucracy in Washington, right?
Right.
And she doesn't need the job, you know?
Right.
In Minnesota, Education Minnesota, which is the state-level union, takes $57 million out of the paychecks of our teachers. And they go and spend it on
That is a staggering number.
$57 million. They have 86,000 members.
And you got teachers out there that are begging for supplies, begging for, you know, trying to
spending
raise money.
Spending their own money.
Spending money out of their own pocket.
So let's, let's talk about teachers for a second.
Million.
They're not the bad guys here.
No.
We, what I think DeVos is going to do is reach out to teachers who want to view themselves as educators and professionals. For most women and men who go into teaching, it's a mission.
Right.
And they, and as my, this is what DeVos said, they pour themselves into these children and they want to be professionals and educators. They don't want to be trade unionists. But you know, they get into a, they get into a job where the union's just always been there, actually only since the 60s and 70s. And they really, that's not why they're there, and they're not there to fight it.
Right.
So I think we need to free them of that top-down control model.
Well, and hopefully give those teachers, because we've heard, I mean, I've heard from so many teachers throughout the years anonymously because they're too afraid to speak out because they're afraid of the repercussions. Hopefully we can provide them with the opportunity, and they are given the opportunity where they can speak out, where they can, where they can do that and not feel threatened of losing their job or repercussions. That, that confirmation hearing, I almost felt as if the opposition to Betsy DeVos in the line of questioning did themselves a disservice. Because anybody paying attention to that confirmation hearing, you're not walking away looking at the criticism that she received during that, thinking they made a lot of relevant points and asked her relevant questions. Most of those questions were completely irrelevant to the job of which she's going to be tasked to do.
Right. Senator Franken asking her whether or not she believes in conversion therapy. What the hell is was that about? I mean, how does that even come up? You know, it kind of made him look like an idiot.
Women's health. Sanders was doing his shtick on free childcare and free college and free everything. And DeVos was very, very gracious. And she said, "Senator, nothing is free." You know, and he goes, "Well, you're right. Oh, on to the next point." You know, it's kind of a cute moment.
I like your Sanders impersonation. It's good.
you know, it's so interesting to watch these high-powered people that the president-elect has selected to work with sit in front of our elected officials. It's not just DeVos, but these generals that have been coming in and the Tillerson guy, you know, who's CEO of Exxon, and they have to take it. This happens to us, by the way, down at the Capitol when we go to testify. These elected officials really knock you around.
Yeah.
And they use these moments to, you know, beat the snot out of people.
The grandstand.
And the grandstand. You know, I what I like about it is that there are elected officials. And so the people are represent, you know, the people's representative is not afraid of the king in his court or the queen in her court or whatever. But at the same time, the grandstanding really bothers me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't reflect well on us. Now, Senator Franken did shake her hand after the hearing and continue his lecture. He was lecturing her afterwards, and she very politely stood there and chatted away. And when Betsy DeVos tried to shake Senator Elizabeth Warren's hand, Warren sort of, you know, gave her this look of contempt and waved at her and walked out of the room.
Yeah, refused to shake her
hand. Refused to shake her hand, yeah.
What, I feel like the advantage is on, you know, I'll say for the sake of our conversation, our side right now, there was such that air of inevitability that Hillary was going to get elected that those who will be on the front lines fighting against, you know, what Betsy DeVos would want to do in this administration, want to do with education, are going to need to get up to speed because I don't think they were quite prepared. They haven't quite prepared themselves yet because they thought that Hillary was going to get elected.
Well, not only that, but they spent like 30% more than they normally
right.
do. I mean, SEIU has actually announced a 30% budget cut.
So with that, what do you think, right?
What brings joy to my heart?
What does Kim Crockett,
I sing,
from the Center of the American Experiment want to see fast-tracked? What moves would you like to see, given that it seems like, you know, the ball's in our court? What would you like to see first and foremost moving forward?
Oh, boy.
You are given Betsy DeVos's job. What would Kim Crockett do?
Well, I asked in my post on this, is it too much to ask that DeVos would end the Department of Education, at least as we know it?
Can you even imagine?
And, you know, Reagan tried, you know, he concluded he couldn't do it. I have all the confidence that we can do that. Why not devolve a power back to the states and then ask the states to
right.
devolve that power
yeah.
back down to our school boards.
Right.
Wow. We have a system of federalism. Let's use it because it works.
Yeah. Especially in something like education, which is so community-driven and community-oriented.
Right.
I mean, the needs and what's relevant to kids in rural Arkansas is incredibly different than the needs
yeah.
and what's relevant to the kids in urban Minneapolis, and
right.
which is different than, you know, Montana. I mean, everywhere you go, you have different cultures and
you
different
degrees of
relevancy.
You can break it down further than that. I mean, you can just go to areas... within the state.
Right here within the Twin Cities.
Yeah, and you can break it down.
North Minneapolis.
The community needs are so community specific. And
right.
If you did that, it would bring a level of importance back to those elections. Because that's the one thing that seems to be missing is that
yes.
those school
yeah.
board
you know
elections.
Who's on your school board?
No. But you're talking to an individual that half the time doesn't know what grade his children are in. So.
Right. Well, you've got a wife for that.
Exactly.
You know.
Right, she's a stay at home mom for a reason.
What is your name? I get up right. really early in the morning and then I feed you.
Yeah. The other day she was like, he's got a high school planning meeting. And
Hi,
I'm
Dad.
Like, high school?
Yeah,
when's he going to high school? She's like next
right.
year. I'm like,
okay.
What?
Okay, but Sorry. she's in the same damn high school that you and I went to, where a bell goes off and she runs into one room for 45 minutes. Another bell goes off. She runs out into the
yeah.
hallway. Goes. We haven't done anything
right.
different, you
right.
guys.
Right.
And this is a knowledge economy. We keep hearing about the knowledge economy. And what are we doing to prepare our kids to
right.
not only, you know, get jobs, but to thrive in it?
Right.
What are we doing to prepare these kids to be entrepreneurial if they've got that
right.
spirit, you know? And, you know, each kid, and an educator will tell you that each kid comes to you with different needs and different skills. What are we doing to address that?
Yeah.
And, you know, the Gates Foundation, and this is all a conversation that needs to be happening, but it doesn't because the teachers' union and the bureaucracy, this beast that is the Department of Education, is running us.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to bust out of that. So
right.
that's what I would do is say, let's do something really different.
The oh-so-progressive teachers' union that spends $57 million, what did you say, $57 million?
Just in Minnesota.
Just in Minnesota,
right.
taking out of teachers' paychecks to
right.
elect progressive politicians. They are anti-progress when it
right.
comes to evolving and getting rid of this antiquated public school system.
And they don't represent our teachers, most of whom are there to teach, and they're exquisite, and they love our kids mm-hmm. as much as we do.
651-989-5855. Kim Crockett, thank you so much for your time this morning. Always
You're
a
welcome.
Real pleasure when you come in. I really appreciate it.
I'll be back soon. We've
yeah.
got lots to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a couple
There's
things.
There's a lot going on down in St. Paul.
We're gonna have you back in probably early next week to talk about a couple of St. Paul issues as well.
Coming up, we are going to get into The Minnesota Real ID measure is moving forward. We'll give you some details on that. Plus, didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday. We need to get back to Obamacare and what's happening here in Minneapolis and Minnesota. There was a rather interesting press conference that took place with Dayton a few days ago that we need to get into. We'll have all that coming up on Justice and Drew.